Inner Space from Planet Waves, the 25th annual readings, which is kind of crazy, a quarter of a century of doing these every year. I vividly remember writing the first ones back in 1998. Thank you for availing yourself of this work and for being a trusting customer. So this is the point of inception of this cycle of audio readings. The written readings are 99% complete. We're just putting the finishing editorial touches on them. And I want to begin with a statement of my intention and a concern that I would like to address about the nature of this forthcoming transit of Pluto entering Aquarius, which takes place in March initially and then on and off through late 2024. There'll be three separate ingresses of Pluto into Aquarius. Normally there are just two. But Pluto has slowed down so much because it's going further and further from the Sun that it's now behaving like a much more distant outer planet, which is exactly what it is. It's not quite Eris, which can take like 6 years to change signs, as it did from Pisces to Aries 100 years ago, but this is the first time in living memory that that Pluto's going to make three ingresses. And the thing with Pluto in Aquarius is that it's going to focus matters that are profoundly important associated with our newly submerged digital lives. We take the internet for granted. It certainly insinuated or its way in or been forced upon every single facet of life, from dog chips to pizza profiles to being followed around by your GPS and Find My iPhone and all of that stuff. And there would seem to be no escaping it. And what is likely to happen through the course of 23 and 24 and then all through Pluto and Aquarius, which lasts for 20 years, is that the intensity of the digital effect and the power of digital technology in our lives is going to increase. And though this doesn't necessarily seem like an astrological topic, I am tracking it astrologically, and I am deeply concerned about the nature of this thing called transhumanism. Transhumanism is the conversion of humans into devices or device-like entities. Transhumanism does not merely include all of the things that the dystopian scenarios have, like biosecurity zones, which were first introduced in 2020, and digital passports, which the G20 just committed to. Transhumanism is also the way that we are conditioning ourselves to be like the devices that we use. And this is as simple as talking to Siri in a way that Siri understands, or talking to any voice-activated device and having to change your speech pattern so that the computer understands you, and being misunderstood and having to repeat and conditioning ourselves to be more like they are. Now, this is likely to continue at full strength, and I think the intensity is going to increase under Pluto and Aquarius. I don't think people are ready for this. I don't think they're going to associate it necessarily with the digital revolution. But what I want to begin with is to say that given this whole context, it's very important to remember that there are two sides to Pluto. One is this side about raw power that we are the most familiar with. And the other is a more, the word that's been used the past 40 years or so is an evolutionary influence, which is another way of saying a spiritualizing influence. And it wasn't Jeff Green who came up with this first. It was Isabel Hickey in a monograph, probably the last thing that she published, that came out in the late 1970s, which said basically Pluto is a binary object. And this was before the discovery of the main kind of binary partner of Pluto, Charon, or Charon, or Charon, however you choose to pronounce it. I think it's actually pronounced Charon, C-H-A-R-O-N. I prefer Charon, not to be confused with Chiron. And there's actually 6 points orbiting one common barycenter. And what she said was, we really have to make a choice to tune in to the wisdom principle of Pluto. She associated it with Minerva, who's an extension of Pallas Athene in her Roman expression. And I would like to let resound through this entire reading, which I'll be doing for the next like week and a half, many hours a day, that my intent is for you and me and the people around us and society as a whole to connect with the wisdom and evolutionary impulse of Pluto, rather than to tap into or be subjected to the raw power aspect of Pluto. So, that said, we begin your Aries reading in a somewhat unusual moment of your planet being retrograde. It's not retrograde that often, only about 9% of the time. It's very rarely retrograde in Gemini, and it is. And so we begin with a kind of a review going on. The review, in my opinion, has been going on since August when Pluto first entered Gemini, and it will continue all the way through March when, Mars retrograde in Gemini. With audio, I can't just read what I just said. It's like, I have to stop and replay it. So with Mars retrograde in Gemini, your ruling planet, of course, and this process will complete in late March when Mars makes its final square to Neptune, which I've written quite a bit about in your reading, and then enters Cancer, your fourth place. And that's a whole new phase. And normally a sign change of Mars is not a big deal. It changes signs every couple of months. But when it changes signs for the first time after a long retrograde, that's a significant point of transition for you personally. The house where Mars is retrograde is Gemini, which is your third house or place. I use those terms interchangeably. I kind of prefer place. And that is about your mental processes. So the third is about communication. It's about commerce, buying and selling. It's about your neighborhood. It's about your brothers and sisters. It's about your neighbors. Cousins actually are covered under another house, but if you live close to your cousins and you're with them a lot, then I would count your cousins as part of your immediate community. So I count the third as your essentially your immediate relatives who are peers, not parents or uncles and aunts, but your peers. And everything you do in terms of business that's either walking distance, short driving distance, or slightly longer than short driving distance, where you know the people by name. It's not about buying and selling on the internet. It's about the commerce of the village. And it's also about your communication style. It's about how you like to speak, how you like to write, and more than anything, how you like to think, and then express yourself. And so Mars retrograde here is a rethinking of all of this for you, and it is a review with a purpose, which is to, in my view, help you evaluate the truth of your words. Now, where I come up with the truth of your words is, I mean, Mars retrograde in the third is going to have that verification factor to it, no matter what, especially in Gemini, where there's going to be two or more sides to the story. And people tending to be very biased and belief-oriented are essentially going to pick the side of the story that they are not threatened by and stick to it, whether it's true or not. That is not a, let's just say, spiritually wholesome place to be. You know, most of the world is more interested in what it believes rather than what is true. And so we end up, especially here in the digital age, having this thing greatly magnified. If I believe it, then it is true. Not, for example, if it is true, then I believe it. Or this is what appears to be going on. This is what I seem to be thinking. I'm going to check myself and verify how I got there. What steps did I take to reach that conclusion? Now, I'm learning that this is like really spiritually evolved and like self-aware way to proceed. This is highly unusual for people to question their beliefs in any way, rather than just simply assuming that what they happen to think happens to be right. Now, the thing that makes this especially necessary for you is that Mars is making a series of squares to Neptune. It's making a series of squares to Neptune, which is in Pisces, in the 12th house. And so you have three Pisces factors. Pisces itself, sign right before yours, very important sign in any chart. And then the Neptune factor, the modern ruler of Pisces, and then the 12th house. So all of that is saying that there is a possibility of a deep delusion that you are confronting in some way. That's the idea of the square, is that it's an inner confrontation, and it can result in outer action. Usually what happens with a square is that the tension is so strong that people will project the square outward as some form of confrontation or of conflict. That's not that helpful. And the other thing that goes on with Mars square Neptune is that it can have a self-destructive thing going on with it. Self-destructive meaning overindulgence or overindulgence in the various different kinds of substances that are associated with Neptune, or a confrontation with some form of self-deception. And when there's self-deception going on, then, you know, pretty much all bets are off and there's no such thing as true, just what we believe. And so this whole pattern is pushing you to really evaluate your thoughts, to really think through how you got from your point of origin to the conclusion that you made, and to verify and validate and seek an understanding of your, like, how you got to where you are. And to completely cancel the idea that you're automatically right. Now, this is an old spiritual issue. It is from the ancient days, and I learned about it through the work of Carlos Castaneda when The subject he was writing about, Don Juan Matus, the shaman he was writing about in the hills of Mexico, described this thing he called clarity as one of the enemies of mankind. Clarity is thinking you know when you don't. And this basically is the state of the world. And once you start doing this, and this is why it is so inconvenient, once you start doing this, you're going to see when you start questioning your clarity, you're going to see how little of that happens. And once you become sensitive to your concept of, you know, how you know what you know, how you know what you think you know, you may suddenly discover that it's this very rare thing to do. But it is certainly time. And it is certainly time for you to see what you've been missing and live a fully conscious process of evaluating what you hold to be true. Now, just to conclude this, and perhaps to help understand why I, you know, put such a sharp point on this, in terms of growth and spiritual progress and just making your way through the world and through the day, I do not think that anything matters more than this one thing: how you know what you think you know. So be bold. I would suggest never being afraid to fact-check yourself on something that you believe now, on things that you believed years ago, and going forward, whatever you may be presented with in the future. Now, within your own birth sign, there's really exciting things happening this year. And this goes back a ways, but in particular, the next 5 months or so through May are going to bring a lot of focus on to the sign Aries. And not only that, they're going to ignite and fully engage the things that have been going on in Aries for a long time. And the most important one of those is Chiron's presence in Aries. That started around 2018. It's going to go to around 2026. And it is a, at most, twice in a lifetime transit to have Chiron make a conjunction to your sun or your ascendant, since Chiron has a 50-year orbit. Some people might never get it, but it's very unusual for someone to have more than two of these contacts, and usually it's once in a lifetime. And this is a special time in that it is a moment of accelerated growth and of doing the very important work of personal integration. And so with Chiron in Aries, you're becoming your own healer. You're becoming your own teacher. And there's also a thing about making peace with the nature of your own existence. Chiron can concentrate a lot of growth into one time in your life and certain very specific aspects of your life. But just like Mars square Neptune, from Gemini to Pisces, is encouraging you to hold one value and one alone, which is a value on truth. And I don't mean this in some abstract way or, you know, absolute way or something like that. I mean it in the most practical sense of what is real and what is not for you. And also the constant investigation of how you know what you think you know. So Chiron is one of the most dependable points of focus when it comes to documentation. And so there's something here about understanding the trajectory of your life and something about understanding the purpose that you are living for and investigating whether you are being true to that purpose. Now, Chiron can be a kind of a many-edged sword, and there can be a crisis over, this, like, whatever discovery Chiron is coming with can precipitate a healing crisis. Is very good at that. And the healing crisis will, if you embrace it and move with it, will be an empowering experience for you, in that you will learn, you will make discoveries about yourself. And I think that one of the greatest gifts of Chiron is learning how to be unequivocally, uncompromisingly yourself and living in your reality rather than all the other things that people are taught and trained to do. And so if you're noticing that you're in some conflict, a good place to check is to do this reality check about who you are and what you're doing and your process of becoming. Now, I began with my concerns about transhumanism and this whole trip that the human race seems to be on of being conditioned not to be people. This is what's going on. We're being conditioned to not be caring, feeling, not understanding, thinking, empathetic, loving people who live through their physical body and physical senses. And that's the point of focus for everything. And you're getting the accelerated version of this. Now, Jupiter comes along and will first of all help you fill in certain spaces. You will have affirmation of your own process and your own presence in the world, which can be very difficult to feel now. As you probably know, I am a student of the philosopher Marshall McLuhan, and one of the what McLuhan basically documented after he got done documenting the effect of what the printing press did to people is his most famous public career was documenting the effect of electricity and electrical communication on people. And what he pointed out, and I think it's one of his greatest observations, is that electricity tends to decentralize and it tends to make people feel like nobodies, insignificant. We are all getting this now at full strength here as we kind of blindly kind of sail down the river of the digital age, not knowing where we are really going. And one of the things that coincides with the rise of electricity and electrical communication is Eris in your sign. And I've found this to be a fascinating point of astrological analysis since Eris was, before Eris was named. And what we discovered doing the initial round of research on Eris is it has a way of mixing up the order of things and mixing up and concealing or diminishing or completely obscuring the meaning of things and creating this environment where everything is just basically a bunch of fragmented bullshit, or in the more intellectual terms of academia, a postmodern pastiche. Now, there's no way to feel more insignificant than to just be a postmodern pastiche, a swept-together collection of cliches and things you think you want, but you don't really know if you want. And so this has had a tremendous toll on everyone's sense of their own being, their sense of their own self. Electrical technology unraveled many centuries of literacy, learning, teaching us how to focus within ourselves. And my take on Chiron coming through Aries is that it is here to teach you how to defragment yourself and put yourself back together and get the actual feeling of being a whole person. So we have help from Chiron. Jupiter's coming through. We're going to have more help from Jupiter. And there will be conjunctions by Jupiter first to Chiron, and then to Eris. This is all going to take place in March and April of 2023, before Jupiter leaves Aries and enters Taurus, your second house, which is a pretty good place to have Jupiter, in May 16th of 2023. So I'm looking at this, seeing this, envisioning this for you as a time to confront the ways in which your ideas about who you are have been bollocksed up by digital, by overexposure to digital technology. This has taken a tremendous toll on all of us, and I feel so deeply for the people whose self-concept wasn't that strong to begin with, and who are now basically being reduced to algorithms and their likes and thumbs up and thumbs down, frowny faces on Instagram and other social media platforms. So the presence of Chiron here, just to wrap this up, is saying that you have this absolutely beautiful opportunity to reassemble yourself, and underneath that process of reassembly, to experience yourself as a whole being, as a holistic being, as a fully integrated self. Now, this is another purpose of the spiritual path, and it is one of the reasons why I'm holding yourself to one truth standard is your single most potent spiritual tool. The integration of those halves in Gemini, those twins, the potential opposites and paradoxes of viewpoint, to reconcile that, and then to reconcile that against all that you assume or may think is true when it is not necessarily so. That's another way to say assumption. Okay, so let's take another pause, and then let's get into some of these upper houses in your chart, particularly a review of Pluto through Capricorn, and then Pluto's entry into Aries, and then Pluto's movement into Aquarius, and then the end of Saturn's journey through Aquarius and its ingress into Pisces in a moment. Mm-hmm. I began expressing my concerns about Pluto in Aquarius, which I think is a whole sequence of events that's going to take a lot of people by surprise. And I have not really seen much that makes any sense from the astrology community about what this is about. I think that there's probably a movement to take this in a positive way, which I would endorse, also, though, recognizing the challenges involved there. But let's go back to 2008 when Pluto entered Capricorn. So that was your 10th solar house, and this represented a time of a complete shock to society. And where you have Capricorn is at the very top of your solar chart or of your natal chart, of your Aries rising. And what we've experienced under Pluto and Capricorn is essentially, I guess, borrowing a phrase from a Trump administration former, Trump administration official, who was, far as I know, under criminal indictment, the dismantling of the administrative state. Capricorn is very much about the administrative state. It's about the dependability of the post office. It's about the library still being there when you want to bring your book back or take out a new one. It is about any of society's institutions pretty much that predate your birth, predate your parents' birth, predate your grandparents' birth. Capricorn is supposed to be about what lasts a while. And though this process actually began in the 1990s with Uranus and Neptune going through Capricorn, really nothing came through like Pluto. And there was essentially an implosion of the entire financial industry globally immediately upon Pluto's ingress into Capricorn. And this is just one of the most stunning examples of a large collective transit having this ridiculous and undeniable effect on everyone and everything. And where you have Capricorn is in your house, associated with your reputation, your profession, your career, and your relationship to authority. I cannot imagine the things that you have been through. There was an initial peak in 2008. There was another peak through 2011 through 2013, which was the series of Uranus-Pluto squares associated with the Occupy Wall Street movement. That was the kind of public reaction to that. There was kind of this moment where people stood up to the corporate authorities that they figured out were running their lives. And then by the end of Pluto in Capricorn, which is pretty much the last two or three years, 2020 through 2023-ish, the public values had completely flipped from we are the 99% to we will do what you tell us. We will go and inject whatever you tell us to inject. We will live under the thumb of your authority, whether you're right or wrong. We'll do exactly what you say. And that is quite a stunning reversal and betrayal of trust and an abuse of corporate and government power. And the thing is that it is happening in your house of corporate and government power. So the question is, what's left? What's left of your trust in the system? What is left of your relationship to that which has some authority in your life? What is left of the structures that you depended on? What is left of the world that your grandparents knew and that you grew up expecting would be there? Okay, so that's more or less over. We have lived through a revolution. Pluto and Capricorn, beginning to end, has represented a revolution, a takeover of something else, a whole new kind of power, a whole new kind of jurisdiction, and at the same time, a completely new business world, how they got the entire business world to comply with shutting down every office, I do not know, but they did. Somehow, they did it. I mean, that is an astounding use of corporate and government power. But for you, it is particularly personal. You have experienced this as something, you know, being taken apart in terms of your direct relationship to your goals, your intent, your expression of your power, your relationship to authority. And now what we're left to do, a couple of things. One is to size up what you've learned. Where were you on January 1st, 2008, and where are you today? What, in terms of your relationship to all the things covered by Capricorn and the 10th and expressed through the action of Pluto? The second is, where are we going forward? So now Pluto is going to spend about a year and a half transitioning between Capricorn and Aquarius in your solar chart, between the 10th and 11th houses. If you're Aquarius rising in your natal chart, using whole sign houses, again, between your 10th and 11th houses. The 11th house is considered by classical astrology to be the best house. It's the house that is associated with people's hopes and dreams, with their friends, with the revenue they make from their professional income and their reputation, being the second house from the 10th, right? The 10th is about your career, professional reputation, and your achievements, and the house that immediately follows that is the house of your revenue that is based on your reputation. Now, it is possible this has worked out quite well for you, that you've just got it, how you're going to adapt to this. You sensed the earthquake coming, like animals who, like, you know to go to a safe place when they feel an earthquake coming days before. And you may have intuitively and instinctively picked this up. And it is also possible that you will be able to get Pluto in Aquarius working very well for you. But the only way that that's going to happen is if you take leadership in your community. This is basically going to be a case of, lead, follow, or get crushed. And the other part of this is that there is only so much you want your reality to be part of the plugged-in world of IP addresses GPS. It is very tempting for people to just jump on the newest technology. But when you study technology and the history of technology and the history of people and society just signing up and blindly accepting everything that is sort of like dangled in front of them to buy because it just seems so cool, right? Like, remember the groovy ads with the iPod and the silhouette ads of the person with the iPod in their hand and they're grooving to the music and all this stuff. Remember those from like 20, 30 years ago? Well, this is not that groovy scene is not what we've got now. And so one of the ways to apply the wisdom principle of Aquarius is to preserve your social bonds, physical, in the incarnated world. By that I mean, get together with people, spend time with people, get to know them in person, try to get to meet everyone at least once in person. Work with a diversity of different means of knowing people. It's a very popular thing now to only know people through WhatsApp, and you have the whole relationship through WhatsApp. You've never once talked to them. Maybe you see some photos. This, for you, is a danger zone. And as with many other things, Aries is kind of the canary in the coal mine of society, because it is the kind of basis chart for the whole world. And there's something of it being like the archetypal chart of humanity, and you get the privilege of being, you know, an archetype of humanity in the middle of all of this transition of humanity. And I think that your choices, your decisions, your commitment to your own freedom is just absolutely essential. That there's nothing more important. And so your commitment to your freedom is also your commitment to your humanity and understanding the ways your humanity is under threat, and also understanding what that means for all of the people in your life. And you may be one of the most important reference points for the people in your life to have an example of what it means to be fully committed to remaining human. And I will tell you that a lot of this is going to involve your discernment of what is true and what is not. And particularly what is foisted on the public, and particularly what is foisted on the public through digital technology. Aquarius, 11th house, Pluto entering the 11th. And so it matters whether what the public authorities are saying is true. It really makes a difference. If you open up your email or Twitter or whatever, and you are told by your device that space aliens have invaded the world, and therefore you must stay in your house until further notice, I think we would both agree that it matters whether that assertion is true. You can't just say, space aliens, no space aliens, what's the fucking difference? Nobody would say that. And by the way, this is on the short list of things that could happen under Pluto and Aquarius, is the claim of an alien invasion. And I am absolutely not kidding you. There is historical documentation that this is in the works. There has been predictive programming. There's been all kinds of preparation of people for this idea, all kinds of conditioning through an entire generation of movies, and even further, going all the way back to the War of the Worlds. We simply expect that this is a possibility. But whether it happens or not, take it as a metaphor. When a threat to the public is announced and you're choosing how to respond and why to respond that way, your discernment is the only thing you've got. That's it. You have to make up your mind about what you believe is true. And the problem with Aquarius, the whole challenge of Aquarius, is that the tendency when Aquarius is involved is that people just go with the herd. They go with the herd. And so I think that the real challenge of Aquarius, Pluto, is going to be the relationship of an individual to the group. Usually the relationship of an individual to the group or the mass, right, the mass consciousness, the millions of unnamed people who then manifest as the 20 or 30 people around you any given week or month, what they believe is the thing that you're supposed to believe and that you're supposed to act on. But the question is it really true? And I would urge extreme caution. However, the message of Aquarius is that to stand up to this is almost always very difficult. And most people find it impossible. Now, nothing's really impossible, but most people find it impossible to stand up to their family, to stand up to any possibility of being excommunicated from the group or from society in any way, from being in any way cast off, right? That's the deep shadow side of Aquarius, is the fear of the tribe or the family just leaving you out in the cold, because you're too much trouble in some way. And this is a deep, profound fear that the human race carries in us, and I describe it as the shadow side of Aquarius. Now, the shadow side of Aquarius, and the way that that kind of flips is, well, most people will just do anything, and so anything that everybody else is doing. And so I am certain that over the next couple of years, you are going to be directly confronted with situations where you have to make up your mind whether you're just going to go along to get along, or whether you're going to fully embody the wisdom part of Pluto and some of the power part of Pluto and stand on your own. Now, you're an Aries. That's what you're supposed to do anyway. And you've got Chiron in your sign now for at least a few more years. Chiron's providing you a tremendous advantage in the standing on your own kind of ability, right? But it's not going to last forever. So you really need to grab that skill and practice it and develop it and learn, which we all have to do. I mean, the pressure is on everyone to be your own person at all times. Now, if you have not noticed a theme developing, it is the theme of destabilizing influences and how to hold your center amidst them, and also the relationship between technology and these destabilizing influences. And by technology, I don't really just mean like the close-and-play phonograph or, you know, the baby monitor, although the baby monitor, that one, that would be a very interesting conversation for media graduate seminar on the imposition of the robot as the thing babysitting. How far is it between the baby monitor and some kind of an algorithm that determines if the baby is in distress and so forth and sends you a text message? And then you can just leave your kid in this kind of techno crib and go out to the movies or something. Or who goes out to the movies? But I do recommend that because of being among people. Very important. So here's an interesting thing about Aries. You have, as your second house, Taurus. The second house is priorities, values, self-respect, self-esteem. And then in classical astrology, movable assets, your pots and pans, tools of the trade, and available cash. So it's what you hold toward you. It's what you embrace, what you have, what you possess, and ultimately how you feel about yourself. And you're very fortunate to have Taurus as the second place of Aries, because it is a strong foundation to build on. It is very good with money. It will generally feel good enough about itself to be able to get by in the world. So it's not just Aries who makes you who you are. It's the position of every other sign and house and how they relate to each other. And the truth is, as far as I'm concerned, as an astrologer, Aries is a pretty good sign to be because it teaches you, it gives you resources, it gives you points of orientation, and a kind of a passport in society. But Taurus, for the last 4 years or so, has been under the influence of Uranus, a destabilizing influence, and also one associated with electrical technology, the internet, and communication technology. Electricity is very much a thing of the Uranian era. Uranus is discovered in the late 18th century when electricity is first being worked with and harnessed, and guys like Ben Franklin through much of his life, he's born in like, I think, 1705 or something, and he was the first electrician. Yes, Ben Franklin was, in my view, historically, the first electrician, came up with the word, and the first electrical engineer. So he's figuring out electricity, and Uranus is discovered. And so that's an important, kind of a historical synchronicity, and it carries forward that Uranus is involved in a whole diversity of inventions and the electrification and the digitization of the world. And this is now an influence in your second house. It's going to be there for several more years. And so what I'm reading that as being about is reminding you of the importance of keeping your priorities in order and understanding the extent to which these influences, right? It's hard now to sort out everything that's coming in from the internet. But what is not difficult to see is this destabilizing influence that is then creating a situation where people are completely confused. And even having Taurus on the second, which would normally keep you quite grounded and sensitive to and aware of tradition and wanting to uphold it in some way, could be in some ways just kind of messing with you. And so I suggest that you do a kind of an inventory of what you held as important prior to the advent of digital technology. Now, my clients, listeners, and readers tend to be old folks like me. Some are maybe as young as 40. Maybe there's a couple of people in their 30s. Hello, welcome. But for the most part, my clientele, my listeners and readers are like between 40 and 80, and some are even older than 80. So you remember what the experience of life was like pre-digital. And I would deeply and strongly and vociferously encourage you to make contact with those times. Pull out your high school yearbook. Remember the first time you ever saw a computer or the work product of a computer. So you have a sense of what the transition point was. Find old photo albums. Some people still have those. The photo albums predate digital cameras, the physical objects with the sticky paper on it. And remember what life was like before that. I realize that it can seem like it was long ago and far away, but there's another effect of it being tucked out of direct memory, tucked out of physical memory, and I think it's crucial that you reestablish contact with your pre-digital self. Okay, now, Uranus and Taurus, that's going to last a couple of more years. It's going to move on to Gemini. That will kind of unleash a dimension of your brilliance. Mars retrograde can do that as well. But Uranus and Gemini really is just going to like fire up your whole mental and inventive process. But for now, we've got Uranus in Taurus, and Jupiter's coming. And this is a very exciting transit, I think, because the past few years, we've had Jupiter dancing back and forth between the signs. That is what it is. But it has been doing that. Rather than spending a year uninterrupted in a sign, it's been doing a lot of dancing around. And we've just this week, on the 19th, experienced that dance as Jupiter re-entered your sign, took a brief vacation, I think sometime like around October or something. It retrograded back into Pisces for like 8 weeks. And then it turned around and re-entered Aries. What now happens is Jupiter moves clear through Aries. It's going to form conjunctions to Chiron and Eris in the spring, Northern Hemisphere spring, and one other point, which I'll get to at the end, and then moves into Taurus. And it's going to stay in Taurus between about May 16th, 2023, and about May 24th, 2024. This is going to help you continue to focus your prioritization, your assessment of your values, and it should be a helpful influence financially if you stay true to your values. And you're going to see that's a, if you read some of the other readings, almost all of them in there is some message of how important it is that you be true to your values. Right, true to your priorities. The only way to be true to your priorities is to know what your priorities are. And I think the only way to know what your priorities are is to revisit your pre-digital self, pry open that file, that space of consciousness, that dimension, that kind of self-contained within yourself, and really get a sense of what has been important to you since childhood. And then see how much of that has made it through to the modern world, to the current era, where everything has just been confused, bollocksed, scrambled, and completely recreated by digital, not merely by digital technology, but by living at the bottom of the digital ocean like SpongeBob SquarePants. By the way, a couple of other bits. Retrieving that pre-digital self, Saturn in Pisces, should be very helpful with that. Saturn in Pisces commences in March. It goes for about 3 years, and that will help you enter into and recover the dimensions of yourself that you might think of as your own prior incarnations in this incarnation. To live that transit fully, it would also make sense to revisit your ancestors to the extent that they're living, or to honor their memory and to remember the things they taught you that are useful, and then the things that they taught you or the examples that they set that were not useful. So there'll be a kind of an inner adventure here with Saturn in Pisces, and will be one of the most important influences to help you re-enter yourself and like be in that person who you were in the past. And this is not for nostalgic purposes, but I think rather a very serious recovery mission. Another influence that is similar to this is going to be Venus retrograde in Leo. This stretches through basically spring through summer, Northern Hemisphere. The whole process lasts about 4 months. The dates are given in the written portion of the reading, and this is about connecting with your child self, and with the pleasures and the impetuousness and the desire to celebrate life and have fun. So Venus, usually pretty quick through a sign. Venus can go through a sign in just 3 weeks, depending on where it is in its cycle. But in this case, Venus is going to stay in your fifth for more than 4 months. This is a tremendous blessing and will help you reconnect with the beauty of your inner being and help you feel like you have made contact with your inner being sufficiently that you have something that you can express. It's a creative house. It's one of the most creative houses, but it doesn't work as creative unless you feel like you've got something that you can express. When you don't feel like you've got something you can express, the fifth house is more likely to manifest itself as like bungee jumping, a daring activity that requires no skill. You just jump off the bridge or something like that and see what it's like to be at free fall speed without having to go through all the training of jumping out of an airplane. Personally, I'd rather jump out of an airplane than bungee jump. But the bungee jumping option is the kind of cheap way out of the fifth. And the deep way into and through the fifth is to make contact with your inner being and that child, the inner being who's still a kid, your little kid. And you do not need to wait until June or whenever when Venus enters Leo to be your little kid. You can just be your little kid all the time and look at the world amazement and wonder that is not typical of adults. One last thing. Sexuality is a very important part of staying in contact with the truth of your inner reality. And part of what Jupiter is going to do as it moves through Aries very soon in Aries, it's going to take place probably around January, is make contact with a deep point. It's a scattered disk object. It's got an orbit of about around 270 years, I think. It's called Salacia. Let me see if I can put an article about Salacia onto your page. Salacia in Aries, and this is not like most of the new discovered planets, not really a point of conversation in astrology, but Salacia is encouraging you to understand the ways in which essentially all facets of sexuality have now been declared to be inappropriate. You know, except maybe if you're a proper hipster and you decided that it's time to push out a baby with your monogamous partner, then just like in the Catholic Church, you get a free pass. You get to have sex once or twice without having to think that it's some kind of a sin. Society has, under the influence of digital, has gone completely down the rabbit hole of, oh my God, can't be vulnerable, can't express this, can't reveal lust, can't be attracted to people. Oh my God, I'm going to get Me Too'd if I say hello to this person. And wait, it'll come for women also. That it'll soon be completely inappropriate for a woman to say hello to someone, just like it's been inappropriate for a man to say hello to someone for a long time. We will see what goes around comes around there, and it's all a bunch of bullshit. And what I would suggest is, as part of this, let's say, soul retrieval process, child soul retrieval process, the contacting of the entering into your inner hearth space where that creative fire burns. Jupiter conjunct Salacia, excellent for that. Really decide what you believe is right and wrong and moral and immoral for you. And give yourself a break. And recognize when you're being influenced by people who just think everything is inappropriate and immoral. And Venus retrograde in the fifth, which is one of the more playful sexual houses, it's kind of like either the fifth is either the house where the kind of sex where teenagers have because they just feel like doing it and it's like, oh man, this is yummy. Or for older people, older meaning like, you know, college and above, the kind of sex you would have in an art studio where it's just like, oh wow, we're free to do anything we want here. Lock the door and have fun. fifth house, Venus retrograde. Venus retrograde, by the way, possibility of old flames coming back into your life. Let's close with this. Should an old flame come back into your life? I would say talk to them. Get to see where they're coming from. But I would recommend doing so without any expectation that the relationship will revive, but rather, I mean, it might, but rather that something is returning to your consciousness for the purpose of completion. So there's a lot of revisiting the past and past attitudes and past values here. And I think rather than it being about nostalgia or dwelling in the past, what you're really doing is making contact with, your former self, diversity of different times, and your former probable selves, as Seth said. Probable selves meant, oh, I could be that. I could do that. I can be that kind of a person if I want, but circumstances prevented it. Because in this time of a ridiculous chaos that we are living in, there's a lot of possibilities. And in the midst of all of these possibilities is pressure to pretend that they're not real. You don't have a right to have potential, to express your potential, to explore your talents, to understand what gives you pleasure, and to also find solace and happiness and community in the people around you. In the times we're in, we're being told the only appropriate thing to do is to not trust anyone or anything, especially yourself. And I'm saying, under the influence of don't trust anyone, that's when you flip at the bird and say, nah, you can't live, you can't love, you can't have fun, you can't do anything creative, you can't share time with friends, you can't have a girlfriend or a boyfriend or whatever, two boyfriends and two girlfriends, if you don't trust yourself and trust existence in some way. That's it. It's not an option. You do not have fun in life and be productive and creative if you don't trust yourself and, to the best of your ability, trust existence, which always starts with trusting yourself. All right. That is what I have to say to you. I'm now officially warmed up and very happy to be doing these readings. Thank you again for availing yourself of these ideas. Take what works for you. Perhaps scribble down the things you think are controversial. See if there's anything in there for you. Who knows? There might be. And perhaps I will see you over in a different sign. Once again, thanks. And bye for now.